Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 22nd, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest and media savant, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. How you doing?
Good. Pleasure to have you here. So, D.R., lots of news this week, lots of things going on. One of the places to begin is down in Washington with the House and the Senate, who have been squabbling about something that we've never talked about before, called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. So tell me, what has happened over the last 10 days or so?
It's been a very, very bizarre and complicated situation where initially, several days ago, the House voted for fast-track authority for the Trans-Pacific Partnership to give President Obama the ability to sort of expedite negotiations of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but they voted against a measure known as essentially an assistance measure that would make sure that workers who are displaced by trade deals would receive, you know, remedial training, essentially. And it raises the question of why would you want to vote for a trade deal that's going to displace American workers
in the first place, in principle.
Yes, so trade adjustment assistance, as it's formally called, failed. But then Speaker of the House John Boehner evidently split.
Well, before you go there, though, the fact that this trade assistance agreement, which was in tandem with the TPP fast track authority, the fact that failed was a big deal, right?
Yes.
Because Democrats pulled the rug out from underneath Mr. Obama on this one.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. As Jim Nouriakis of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting noted that, quote, progressive Democrats outmaneuvered the Obama administration in Congress to thwart the passage of fast track authority by voting against trade adjustment assistance. But evidently, Speaker of the House John Boehner basically came up with this way of splitting the two votes and then having one direct vote on trade promotion authority, which passed on June the 18th. The controversy is that, among other things, that bill passed with a provision added in by Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin that would, quote, ensure that trade agreements do not require changes to U.S. law or abrogate the United States with respect to global warming or climate change, unquote, which means that in addition to all the controversy about about provisions in the TPP that would allow corporations to basically get rid of laws reducing carbon pollution, it would essentially prevent President Obama from using this trade deal to try to get other countries to go along with carbon reduction deals. So it's just a poison pill all around in terms of trying to get this stuff trying to get pollution reduced.
And just to remind everybody, the TPP, it's so complicated. DR, you and I know how it's mind-bogglingly complicated, all this stuff. And there's so many acronyms, but the TPP is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a trade deal being cooked up basically apparently by corporations. And the thing, aside from the fact that the TPP puts American workers in competition with people making 8 cents an hour overseas someplace, it also gives large corporations a very big hammer to change American environmental laws. Because under this TPP agreement, for example, ExxonMobil could sue the United States government for losses related to a carbon tax if such a thing were imposed. I mean, this is just bad news. So that's the reason there's so much interest. And from the TPP springs all these other acronyms about the TAA, which is the Trade Assistance Agreement. Right. And the fast track authority, which has to do with how they're going to vote on the TPP, it's mind boggling. And then on top of that, Representative Ryan threw in this vaguely worded amendment into the approval that the House of Representatives made, this vaguely worded thing that basically saying, oh, by the way, you can't use any of this to address climate change. That's all off the table, right?
Exactly, exactly. And thinkprogress.org reported on the 18th that, quote, that now that this bill has passed the House, the Senate is expected to pass the House version as well, which would lead the decision to the president. And, of course, and a lot of people have pointed out that the Senate, that the people can sort of make their voices known as to what they think about the idea of the Senate once again voting to provide a fast-track authority. They can basically make it clear to members of the Senate that, no, we do not want this, and this is not a good idea, at which point this would presumably go back to square one in the sort of alphabet soup of TPP and TPA and TAA and ISDS, and these things that would leave American jobs and the environment DOA will finally be put to rest once and for all.
But just to hammer that nail one more time to you, you said if you're worried about this, call your senator, right?
Yes, this is going to go back to the Senate.
Google your senator's name. There's a phone number. That's the best thing to do is call him up and tell him, just tell him to vote against fast-track authority for the TPP, against it. You don't have to argue with anyone. You just have to tell him what you think, because ultimately you have a vote. Here in Massachusetts, I think that one of the leaders against the TPP treaty would be Elizabeth Warren, who's been quite outspoken in it. I think Senator Markey is also against it. You should, if you're in Massachusetts, call them up and call up those two senators and tell them they're doing the right thing. That's also good. They like that.
Exactly.
But if you're in a state where your senator is wavering, call them up and tell them what you think, one way or the other, right?
Calling them up about the TPP is as easy as ABC.
DR, you have a way with words. So, okay, so TPP, we will, we're going to keep our alphabet soup at a minimum tonight. The other interesting thing that climate hawks would want to know about is that up in Seattle, the battle in Seattle continues, right? So, again, as backdrop, Royal Dutch Shell has been given permission by the Obama administration for some reason that I don't even think the Obama administration can explain. They were given permission to go to explore for more oil up in the Arctic. And what they have is this huge, monstrous drilling platform. They're going to go drill in the pristine Arctic wilderness. But that enormous drilling platform is stationed in Seattle during the winter when it's too cold. Currently, are still too cold to drill in the Arctic. And that's where this whole idea of the kayaktivists come from. The kayaks, folks in Seattle get their kayaks out and try and sail in front of this, what they call the Death Star, this huge drilling platform. Long and short of it, this week there was another face-off. I think it was 27 people got arrested from their kayaks by the Coast Guard. But the big drilling platform made it out of port and is on its way up to what's called the Chukchi Sea to search for more oil we don't need.
And as people have noted, that if there's a spill there, that could be far, far more disastrous than BP, could be oil, than the Deepwater Horizon, could be far more disastrous than even the Exxon Valdez, because it's so hard to get rescue operations out there, and it could basically be the worst spill of all time if something goes wrong, and there's a high likelihood that it could go wrong.
The thing I read said that the nearest Coast Guard station is 1,000 miles away.
Wow.
And that Shell itself has admitted that they do the calculation that over time, there's a 75% chance of a spill. So you add those numbers together.
you know that the whole controversy about Shell urging for international carbon pricing coming out of the Paris talks. Maybe they should urge that right now so they don't take this risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway, we will I'm sure that the we send our best wishes to the folks up in Seattle. They're doing the right thing, and God bless them. Speaking of guys that are trying to do the right thing, I saw a letter from my favorite climate hawk besides UDR, my favorite climate hawk, Mr. Bill McKibben. Did you see that letter? And what was in it?
There are two great open letters. One was written to President Obama, and one was written to Secretary of State and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, basically urging both to sort of really get in gear on the climate issue. And Bill McKibben noting with regard to President Obama that there has been boldness, but there also has been too much cautiousness. And he basically made a similar points with regard to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, that this is now the time for bold measures and not taking half steps on this issue. It's interesting to note that a day after the open letter to Hillary Clinton was published, Hillary Clinton was at her formal campaign kickoff in New York and basically talked about how this is one of the greatest crises of our time and mocked those who say that they're not scientists and saying, if you're not a scientist, why don't you talk to one?
Right.
So it's going to be very, very interesting to see, how the voices of McKibben and others continue to, weigh in on the 2016 presidential campaign. We absolutely can't have the same sort of nightmare scenario that occurred during the 2012 campaign, where this issue wasn't brought up at all,
right,
manifesting
right.
itself once again in 2016. We all remember that horrible post-debate remark by then CNN reporter Candy Crowley, saying that she had a question on the tip of her tongue for the climate people and
yes.
just never got around to it. You got to make sure that doesn't happen again.
I think maybe what I should do is send the president a copy of the recent papal encyclical about
mm-hmm.
the environment, and maybe the president can read it and understand why there's a moral dimension to all of this. But anyway,
exactly.
We'll post links to the McKibben letters. They're interesting reads. I think Bill McKibben is calling on Obama to take action in the last 2 years of his, or 18 months now, I guess, of his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've got a couple of other acronyms. We were joking about acronyms before, but between MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and the NYT, or the New York Times, they are both wrapped up in a divestment discussion this week, right, DR?
Yes, there was a great piece in the Boston Globe on June 17th, in which it was noted that a climate change committee at MIT has thrown its support behind targeted divestment from coal and tar sand companies and called for the creation of a new institute dedicated to fighting climate change. It fell short of calling for full divestment, and a lot of divestment activists were obviously and justifiably disappointed. But it partial divestment is better than nothing, I would say. Half a loaf is indeed better than none. So it's good to see MIT appearing to step up on this. And how interesting would it be if MIT divested partially before Harvard divested in any capacity?
Right.
Harvard still insists upon being stubborn and bullheaded about this issue. And also, this comes several days after the New York Times editorial page endorsed divestment, basically making the point that divestment is the sine qua non of addressing this issue. They're talking about the matter of the country of Norway divesting from coal, and the New York Times editorial page noted quote, "There's no question that climate change is one of the great challenges of our time, and if the decision to curb or cut coal investments by major institutions such as the Church of England, Oxford University, Stanford University, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, and now Norway can help raise awareness and build momentum, good," unquote. So it's good to see that the New York Times is standing firmly behind divestment. Now, I do wonder what their op-ed columnist Joe Nocera thinks about that, because if you remember, Joe Nocera was the guy who was shamelessly shilling for the Keystone XL pipeline and attacking Bill McKibben and attacking Jim Hansen and attacking climate activists. I imagine he wasn't too thrilled by that editorial, and I say too damn bad for him.
I have to look. I'm not sure where I read it, but there was an article about divestment and the just pointing out the value of the shame and the, again, I'm big on morals in the show, but the fact that even if Harvard divested all of its fossil fuels, or if every college did, there's a tiny fraction of the total stock of ExxonMobil floating around. So it's highly unlikely to affect the share price, but it has a significant branding damage to these oil companies, and they don't want to be the subject of a divestment campaign because it's not good for their brand. And so this moral shaming is a good thing the divestment movement can do.
That was actually a point made by Jamie Henn of 350.org in a letter to the editor to the Boston Globe in response to an anti-divestment piece by Alex Beam. And I have to acknowledge, I've never read a column by Alex Beam in my entire life. So, in fact, I missed that column that he wrote bashing divestment, in which Jamie Henn noted, quote, "Divestment is effective because it goes after the social license of the industry, hoping to turn big fossil fuels into big tobacco, a pariah industry that has lost its stranglehold on the political process," unquote.
Well, I think that the divestment movement, people, I mean, this stuff kind of percolates along in the background, but divestment is still going on, and if anything, it's growing in consequence, and we will keep you informed about how things are happening there. So lastly, DR, there was an interesting article in a blog post, I guess you'd call it, in a website called Legal Planet that called out the most important issues for 2015. Of course, I think you and I did that at the beginning of the year. We tried to identify what was what were the big deals going to be for climate hawks in 2015. But tell me, what do the people at Legal Planet think of, are the things to keep an eye on during 2015?
They're calling for people to keep an eye on the Paris climate talks, the official rollout of the Clean Power Plan, a case involving mercury emissions that the Supreme Court will address to see if they will sort of roll back requirements to reduce mercury pollution, the Obamacare case in which the issue of statutory language and the plain meaning of statutory language, which has implications for the Clean Power Plan, further developments in the build-up to the 2016 presidential campaign, and of course the papal encyclical, and that all these six events taken together will have a huge, huge impact on where we go going forward.
I think that the question about the Obamacare decision, which now we're in mid to late June now, and that's supposed to come down within the next 10 days or so, for people who may not follow it closely, the whole question before the Supreme Court about the Obamacare thing is whether or not it's basically a missing word, right? Mm-hmm. That it says state health care exchanges. It doesn't say state or federal health care exchanges. And so that's been construed to say that Congress never intended for the federal government to participate in exchanges and blah, blah, blah. The consequences of that are terrible for Obamacare.
Yep.
The reason that it's a climate issue is because much the same argument is being made about the president's clean energy plan. That is to say, within the Clean Air Act, there is language that could be interpreted as contradictory as to whether or not the EPA has the right to do what it's trying to do with carbon dioxide. So it gets very arcane, but the case that will be brought that will be brought to try and stop the president's clean energy plan is in many ways similar to the Obamacare case. And the way the Supreme Court rules on the Obamacare case may tell you how they will think about the president's clean energy plan. Because ultimately they both come down to if there is some technical screw up in the way the law was written, do you go with what is probably the intent of the law, or do you go with what is technically written, what is not technically, but is explicitly written, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a tough one. That's a tough question.
It raises the question, will the Supreme Court get rid of both health care for Americans and then health care for the planet?
Well, as always, DR, you put a great spin on it. We'll have to put it down there. We'll tell our listeners they can check out links to at least most of what we discuss at our blog. It's massclimateaction.wordpress.com. Please leave us a comment. If you're, you can find us on Facebook /massclimateaction. You can share us with your friends from there. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action under the podcast section. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.